Tonight, shocking allegations of abuse against a top member of President Trump's inner circle. Not one, but two of his ex-wives go public, accusing him of a history of violence. And tonight, hours after the White House defended him, he's out. Now, questions swirling about what they knew. NBC News exclusive, a top secret report revealing the Russians successfully broke into the voter registration systems in several states. The big fear now, could Russia stop you from voting when you show up to the polls this year? Flu emergency, fact and fiction. A lot of things you may have heard that just are not true. A new consumer alert, your smart TV could be smarter than you think.
Is your smart TV really spying on you?
Yes.
What you can do to your TV to protect your family. 2 days till the games begin and Olympic fever is building. We're live in Pyeongchang. And oh, baby, is he the cutest thing you've ever seen? How the new Gerber baby is making history.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Savannah Guthrie in for Lester. Tonight, the inner circle at the White House is reeling after one of the president's closest aides, who spends most of his days in and around the Oval Office, suddenly resigned. It happened fast after his two ex-wives came forward with graphic stories of domestic abuse, and in one case, a picture that one of the women says proves it. Tonight, the question, who at the White House knew? NBC's White House correspondent Kristen Welker starts us off.
Tonight, shockwaves at the White House after one of the president's most trusted advisors, Rob Porter, resigned amid allegations by two ex-wives of verbal and physical abuse. Porter sits outside the Oval Office and controls all the documents that land on the president's desk. In a statement, Porter called the claims outrageous and simply false and a coordinated smear campaign.
The president and chief of staff have had full confidence and trust in his abilities and his performance.
Overnight, chief of staff John Kelly called Porter a man of integrity, even as the reports of abuse by Porter first appeared in the Daily Mail, including this picture of Porter's first ex-wife, Colby Holderness, who told the paper Porter punched her, giving her this black eye soon after their 2003 marriage. Holderness also alleges Porter choked her and emotionally abused her. Porter firing back, "I took the photos given to the media nearly 15 years ago, and the reality behind them is nowhere close to what is being described." Porter's second ex-wife, Jennifer Willoughby, told the Daily Mail, Porter dragged her wet and naked out of the shower and was verbally abusive, an account she confirms to NBC News. NBC News has also obtained a 2010 protective order, where Willoughby told police during their separation, Porter ignored her multiple requests to leave her home and at one point punched in the glass on the door. "I called the police, afraid that he would break in," she said. Tonight, mounting questions about how Porter was given such close access to the president and the documents that crossed his desk. A former White House official says Chief of Staff John Kelly was aware of the allegations of abuse before the story broke. Two sources familiar with the matter tell NBC News it is believed Porter was never given full security clearance, although it's not clear why. The administration now on defense.
I think that was a personal decision that Rob made and one that he was not pressured to do, but one that he made on his own.
The White House is not commenting on Porter's security clearance. One other layer to this, Porter is reportedly dating communications director Hope Hicks, who plays a role in all public statements from the White House, including those that were sent out last night in Porter's defense. Savannah.
Kristen Welker at the White House, thank you. On Capitol Hill, the story is yet another government shutdown cliffhanger. The Senate struck a bipartisan deal today to fund the government for the next 2 years, but it is far from a done deal in the House. NBC's Capitol Hill correspondent Casey Hunt joins us now. Casey, good evening, and maybe here we go again.
Savannah, good evening. There was major drama on the House floor today. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi just wrapping up a marathon 8-hour protest speech. It's the longest speech on the House floor in more than a century. She was protesting a major bipartisan budget deal. It was announced today, but doesn't include protections for those so-called dreamers. The Senate deal does raise defense and domestic spending. Some conservatives are complaining that it spends too much money. But at this point, it seems on track to pass, avoiding another government shutdown. Savannah.
We shall see. Casey, thank you so much. Elsewhere in Washington, the buzz is about the revelation that the president has requested the Pentagon to stage a military parade through the streets of Washington. It's certainly not unprecedented, but tonight some are asking why now, and is it worth spending tens of millions of dollars? NBC's chief White House correspondent Hallie Jackson with that story.
It's been 27 years since tanks and troops paraded past Pennsylvania Avenue. Now, the Pentagon's preliminarily planning another procession.
Why divert time, energy, financial resources to the planning of a parade, as the president has asked?
The president's respect, his fondness for the military, I think is reflected in him asking for these options.
The commander-in-chief clearly delighted by the Bastille Day parade in Paris last summer.
And it was one of the greatest parades I've ever seen.
But outside the White House, a mixed reaction, with some suggesting it's reminiscent of the former Soviet Union or North Korea.
Anytime you are staging a massive military event, you can come across as over-militarized and over-authoritarianist.
Washington's last military parade in 1991 to commemorate U.S. victory in the Gulf came right past the White House here. But this time around, it's still too early to talk about a route or a date, maybe Veterans Day, or a price tag. The 91 parade cost about $12 million then, about $21 million in today's dollars.
I say that it's a fantastic waste of money to amuse the president.
I'm not sure that honoring our military is a waste of money.
At this VFW hall outside Charlotte, retired Sergeant Steve Colson agrees.
I was in the military for 20 years, and I stood some of those parades, and it's tiring, but I think it would be a great thing.
A show of military might may be on the way. Hallie Jackson, NBC News, Washington.
And now to our NBC News exclusive on what Russia did to interfere with elections in this country. It's an issue looming large with the critical 2018 midterms coming up. Could your vote be compromised? Well, tonight we've learned about a top secret document revealing just how extensive Russia's meddling was. Senior investigative correspondent Cynthia McFadden has the story.
Tonight, a senior intelligence official with direct knowledge of the top secret report says several states had their voting registration system successfully compromised by the Russian government. This after U.S. officials had previously revealed 21 states were targeted. We asked Homeland Security's Chief of Cybersecurity, Jeanette Manfra, about that secret document.
And I can't talk about classified information publicly. We saw targeting of 21 states, and an exceptionally small number of that 21 were actually successfully penetrated.
The fear Russia would remove voters' names from the rolls, creating chaos, potentially swinging the election.
We were able to determine that the scanning and probing of voter registration databases was coming from the Russian government.
Jay Johnson was DHS secretary when these Russian intrusions were taking place. U.S. intelligence knew by the summer of 2016 the hacking originated from Russia. 2 months later, they told the public.
Should you have done it before October 7th?
Anytime you make a difficult national security decision, somebody says, why did you do that? And then somebody else says, why didn't you do it sooner?
It turned out voters' names were not removed in 2016. But what about this year?
My worry is that since that time, a lot of states have done little to nothing to actually harden their cybersecurity.
I would not agree with that assessment. I would say they have all taken it very seriously.
NBC News reached out to those 21 states. California and Texas, among others, say their voter system was never attacked.
I stand by the list. This was a snapshot in time with visibility that the department had at the time.
But now, with 9 months to go before critical midterm elections, what's being done to secure the vote? DHS is offering cybersecurity help, but some states tell us they're still waiting.
Is there a waiting list for DHS help in the election?
No.
With regards to the election?
There's no waiting list.
No waiting list.
No waiting list.
Secretary Manfred says they will get to everybody and takes us to the secure location where experts look for vulnerabilities that hackers could exploit.
It's a very small, lean, mean team here.
It is. It is. But I like to think that we have some of the best and the brightest.
But some states question whether the federal government should be involved at all.
What do you say to the states who say, we're fine, we're good, thanks a lot, see ya?
And I say you're being naive and irresponsible to the people that you're supposed to serve. 2016 was the wake-up call, and now it's incumbent upon states and the feds to do something about it before our democracy is attacked again.
Many of the states complained to us that the federal government did not provide them with specific threat details, saying that information was classified and state officials did not have proper clearances. Well, DHS Assistant Secretary Manfred tells us those clearances are now being processed. Savannah?
Cynthia, thank you very much. The Olympic Games are just about here. It's a big moment for South Korea, of course. But tonight it is the North Koreans who are grabbing the headlines, starting with the surprise guest leading their delegation. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is in Pyeongchang with all the latest.
With another 280 North Koreans crossing the border, soon all eyes will be on one member of the delegation. Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, will become the first member of the Kim ruling family to set foot in the country. Vice President Mike Pence is also coming to the Games, warning the U.S. will roll out the toughest, most aggressive sanctions ever against North Korea.
We will not allow North Korean propaganda to hijack the message and imagery of the Olympic Games.
But North Korea's imagery is already here. The flag flying in the athletes' village and draped on the side of this building. And after a rocky start, the joint Korean women's hockey team has adjusted, saying they're now getting along smoothly. But there are other worries here. A growing outbreak threatens these games. Confirmed cases of the highly contagious norovirus grew overnight. Now at least 86 sick. 1,200 security officers are quarantined at this dormitory.
We are very worried about the norovirus outbreak.
The Americans have a contingency plan should someone get sick. Isolation pods and old-fashioned advice.
They've been beating it into our heads to just, you know, just wash your hands, wash your hands.
Still, there is excitement in the air. The largest American team ever at the Winter Olympics is ready for gold on snow and ice.
Everything is so big and so, like, so I'm really excited for these games.
Tonight, the good news, no athletes have gotten sick from norovirus, but officials maintain their top priority means keeping those that are ill quarantined. The weather's certainly not helping. On opening ceremony, it'll feel like 14 degrees. Savannah?
But it's a dry cold. Miguel, thank you very much. And by the way, a program note, Lester is on his way. His live coverage from Pyeongchang begins tomorrow night right here on Nightly, and we hope you will join us. Today, we learned more schools are closing down because of the flu, this time in Chicago, and hospitalizations are soaring. They're on pace to exceed the record set just 4 years ago. So why do fewer than half of Americans usually even get the flu shot? Tonight, NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres digs into it and debunks some frequent myths about the vaccine.
38-year-old Heather Holland was a popular second-grade teacher in Texas. Today, parents and students are grieving her death from the flu.
She was really nice to all the kids.
The flu continues to claim lives, including 53 children across the country. And yet, one study showed that more than 53% of adults are not vaccinated.
This year, I didn't get my flu shot because I simply didn't make the time.
Karen Sullivan leads a county health department in Montana, but didn't get a flu shot until her friend Leslie Blythe was hospitalized. She died from the flu.
I will miss my friend so much. She was a dynamic, captivating individual. I'll miss her forever.
We asked people at this diner why, in spite of all the warnings, they had not gotten vaccinated.
Every time I find that I get the flu shot, I end up getting sick. I know it's not the full-on flu, but I just don't like it.
That's one of the biggest flu vaccine myths. The truth is there's no live flu virus in the shot, so it cannot make you sick. Any symptoms mean your immune system is kicking in. Another myth, if I'm allergic to eggs, I shouldn't get a flu shot. The CDC says the chance of a reaction is very unlikely, about 1 in 1,000,000. And for those with severe egg allergies, there are other vaccine options. Tonight in Dallas, Brian Herndon remains hospitalized with flu complications. He didn't get vaccinated and had to have both feet and 9 fingers amputated.
And Brian developed a blood infection called sepsis, just one of the complications that can make the flu so serious. Even though this year's vaccine may not totally prevent the flu, it can still help reduce the chances you'll suffer a life-threatening complication.
And it's just awful what we've seen this year, Doctor. Thank you very much. A new winter blast today across a big part of the country. Snow and ice from Ohio up to Maine. In some places like upstate New York, there are up to 10 inches of snow on the ground. The ice has made travel particularly difficult from Virginia to Connecticut, including a scary scene today at BWI Airport in Baltimore. A Southwest plane skidded off the runway. Good news there, though, nobody was hurt. Still ahead, while you're watching TV, is your TV watching you? The new warning tonight and how to protect your family. And then the inspiring story behind the new face of an iconic American brand.
That's Mama's Stay with baby, us.
Back now with a new consumer alert about smart TVs. Perhaps you're comfy on the couch or sitting around the table watching us on one right now. Well, the folks at Consumer Reports say those TVs could be vulnerable to hackers, potentially spying on you. More than 168 million Americans have a smart TV, and NBC News business correspondent Jolene Kent has details now on what you can do to protect your family.
Millions of smart TVs connected to the internet, streaming apps like Netflix, could be smarter than you think.
Anything with a connection is a target for a hacker.
A new product test by Consumer Reports found a relatively unsophisticated hacker could take control of a smart TV from thousands of miles away and turn the volume up, change the channels, and force it to play videos to harass or frighten you. The vulnerabilities are found in smart TVs by Samsung, TCL, and others that are connected to the Roku TV platform. Many of those models also track your personal viewing habits thanks to terms of use that you agree to when setting it up.
Is your smart TV really spying on you?
Yes, most of the smart TVs, in fact, all the ones that we looked at, are configured to send back to the manufacturer minute-by-minute reports of the things that you're watching.
That information allows companies to target ads to your TV or even other devices based on what you've watched. Samsung responded in a statement saying, "Protecting consumer data is one of our top priorities. We make every effort to ensure that data is handled with the utmost care." Roku says it takes security very seriously. There is no security risk to our customers' accounts or to the Roku platform, as stated by Consumer Reports. To protect yourself, security experts recommend change your settings by opting out of data collection, always download software security updates, and use a password to protect your Wi-Fi network, because you don't know who else might be watching. Jolene Kent, NBC News, New York.
Coming up, the race against time to find survivors after a deadly earthquake. And Dunkin' Donuts lovers, the big change coming to a store near you. Casino mogul Steve Wynn has resigned as CEO of his empire, Wynn Resorts. This after sexual misconduct allegations dating back decades recently surfaced against him. Wynn also stepped down as finance chairman for the Republican National Committee last month. The billionaire has denied all allegations. A frantic race is on to find survivors trapped in the rubble after a powerful earthquake rocked Taiwan. The death toll has risen to at least seven after the 6.4 magnitude quake toppled buildings. One of the most striking images, a hotel left tilting over the street after its bottom floors collapsed. And there is a change coming to your cup of coffee if you enjoy a cup from Dunkin' Donuts. They are ditching those familiar styrofoam cups by the year 2020 and replacing them with new double-walled paper cups that keep in the heat without burning your hands. The styrofoam cups have been the source of controversy because, among other things, they cannot be recycled. When we come back, the baby making history as the adorable new face of Gerber. And finally tonight, it is one of the cutest competitions in the country. And this year's winner of the coveted Gerber baby title is an 18-month-old named Lucas, who also happens to be making history. NBC's Kristen Dahlgren has that story.
Courtney and Jason Warren knew their baby Lucas was cute.
He's got that twinkle in his eye and his little chucky cheeks.
But they sometimes worried how the rest of the world would see him.
We didn't actually find out he had Down syndrome until he was born. My biggest concern always with Lucas was how people were going to treat him.
Then she sent this picture to the Gerber Baby Photo Contest. While Gerber products still have the picture they've used since 1928, the company also holds a search for the baby of the year to be featured in its social media accounts.
Gerber the Pea!
Lucas is the first baby with Down syndrome to win.
Oh my goodness, my child's gonna be the next Gerber baby.
Dad Jason is in the National Guard and says the $50,000 in prize money will go to Lucas's education.
Seeing your child exceed in life is something I'm looking forward to.
This is life-changing.
That it is. And we're hoping Lucas looks back on it and feels proud.
Hi, Lucas.
Congratulations.
Lucas made his national debut on the Today Show this morning, a natural.
What has this meant to you guys? I mean, it's incredible.
It's just amazing. I mean, he gets to spread so much joy and love with everybody.
Is it for me?
An inspiring ambassador.
Lucas is first. Down syndrome is just something that he has.
Patty cake, patty cake.
With a smile up, that could change the world.
Hi.
Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Calhoun, Georgia.
Cute and a good personality, too. That's nightly news for this Wednesday night. I'm Savannah Guthrie, and for Lester, who reports live from the Olympics tomorrow, I'll see you tomorrow morning on Today. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.